In the midst of the clamour, Tobermory entered the room and made his way with velvet tread and studied unconcern across to the group seated round the tea table. A sudden hush of awkwardness and constraint fell on the company. Somehow, there seemed an element of embarrassment in addressing on equal terms a domestic cat of acknowledged dental ability.
"Will you have some milk, Tobermory?"
asked Lady Blemley, in a rather strained voice.
"Don't mind if I do,"
was the response, couched in a tone of even indifference. A shiver of suppressed excitement went through the listeners, and Lady Blemley might be excused for pouring out the saucerful of milk rather unsteadily.
"I am afraid I've spilt a good deal of it," she said apologetically.
"After all, it's not my Axminster,"
was Tobermory's rejoinder. Another silence fell on the group, and then Miss Resker, in her best district visitor manner, asked if the human language had been difficult to learn. Tobermory looked squarely at her for a moment, and then fixed his gaze serenely on the middle distance. It was obvious that boring questions lay outside his scheme of life.
"What do you think of human intelligence?"
asked Mavis Pellington, lamely.
"Of whose intelligence in particular?"
asked Tobermory, coldly.
"Oh, mine, for instance," said Mavis, with a feeble laugh.
"You put me in an embarrassing position," said Tobermory, whose tone and attitude certainly did not suggest a shred of embarrassment. "When your inclusion in this house party was suggested, Sir Wilfrid protested that you were the most brainless woman of his acquaintance, and that there was a wide distinction between hospitality and the care of the feeble-minded. Lady Blemley replied that your lack of brain power was the precise quality which had earned you your invitation, as you were the only person she could think of who might be idiotic enough to buy their old car. You know, the one they call the Envy of Sisyphus, because it goes quite nicely uphill if you push it."
Lady Blemley's protestations would have had greater effect if she had not casually suggested to Mavis only that morning that the car in question would be just the thing for her down at her Devonshire home. Now, there was a very bland, natty, mustachioed young man sitting there, who'd been drinking away quietly in the corner, without talking to anyone except for an occasional "Cheerio!" to Judge Skimp. Suddenly, he got up and said, "Bet you can't do this!" He put three halfpennies on the table, moved them about very deliberately for a bit, and then looked up with an expression of pride.
"Only touched each halfpenny 5 times and changed their position twice," he said. "Do it again if you like." "Well, isn't he a clever boy?" said Lottie. "Where ever did they teach you that?"
"Chap in a train showed me," he said.
"It didn't look very hard," said Adam.
"Just you try. Bet you anything you like you can't do it."
"How much will you bet?"
Lottie loved this kind of thing.
"Anything you like. £500.
"Go on," said Lottie. "You do it. He's got lots of money."
"All right," said Adam. He took the halfpennies and moved them about, just as the young man had done. When he finished, he said, "How's that?"
"Well, I'm jiggered," said the young man. "Never saw anyone do it like that before. I've won a lot of money this week with that trick. Here you are."
And he took out a note case and gave Adam a £500 note. Then he sat down in his corner again.